Welcome to Storyland Podcast.
Let's bring stories to life.
If people are not coming to the beach to see what I'm finding, I need to take the trash to people. I need to take them the plastic and the stories of the plastic. And I think the stories of these objects are very interesting.
You're listening to Storyland's conversations with children's book authors and illustrators around the world. I'm your host, Gina. Today on the show, we invited Portuguese marine biologist and book author Ana Pago. When Ana was young, she didn't play in a backyard, but on a beach. As she grew older, she realized that a new species was becoming more and more common on the beach, that is plastic. She decided to collect this invasive species and give it a name, Plasticus maritimus, which is also the name of her book and project. In our conversation together, Anne explains the impact of plastic on our ocean and planet, how she started collecting plastic, and her advice on the small actions that children and adults alike can take in their daily lives.
Thank you so much, Gina, for this invitation. I'm very glad. I'm Ana Pego. I'm a Portuguese marine biologist. And right now I'm not working as a marine biologist. I'm just dedicated to environmental education, focused in the ocean, of course, and especially in the subject of plastic pollution. And so I created this project. In the beginning, it wasn't a project. It was just a Facebook page to show people the things that I was finding on the beach. But now it grew. It's only me. It's only me in this project. But now I call it project because I'm doing many different things to raise awareness for this problem for plastic pollution. So I do workshops and I also do some exhibitions on the beach and teachers training and other things related with this subject. The book is an amazing way to reach more people and to get them informed and educated and motivated to make some changes in their everyday life. It's not so difficult.
Yeah, so Plasticus maritimus is your book, and I know that from reading your book, you started with your story of living by the beach, living by the ocean. As you were growing up, you would go to the beach after school. Let's start with the question, what was your relationship like with the ocean and beach, and how did you slowly gain awareness of the plastic pollution that are appearing on the beach?
Yeah, so when I was born, my parents were living right next to the beach. So many kids have gardens, and I was lucky enough to have a beach for me and for my family. So that was a place where I was, what I liked to be most of the time, during the summer or during the winter, or just playing with my friends, or walk on the rocks during the low tide and to explore the tide pools and explore the animals. I fall in love with the beach and the animals and very curious. I always loved whales. It's my favorite animal until now. But at the same time, I was very curious about all that animals living in that small tide pools. So in this beach, I decided that one day I would like to be a marine biologist. Mm-hmm. So that's what I did. But my father, he was also very connected with the beach. I usually go on these walks on the beach with him. And he loved photography. So many times he was just walking and taking pictures. And when I was exploring the animals or picking up some fossils. Also, my father, he had a boat, and so we were used to go sailing, and now my brother surfs, so we always had this connection with the beach. It was normal for us. It it makes part of our life. And many times when I was coming from the school, I was telling my mother, I'm just going to see the beach. And I still do that. Sometimes I just go there. I just want to see the beach. It's like having a coffee or something like that. People go out to take a coffee and I go out to see the beach. So it's normal for us living here. But in 2011, I started to recognize a new species on a beach, and it's plastic. I think the plastic was there before, but I don't know. In that time, I started looking in a different way and noticing that every day, it was there every day. What is this doing here? I started to be more focused in the plastic pollution, in marine litter, than in the other marine species. And I was very worried about this and very depressed, you see. I started cleaning the beach, but it was very quickly to understand that I couldn't save my beach. I can't stay here all the time cleaning the beach every day. I can't do this. And the day after, the beach would be much worse. So that's very frustrating. And around me, most of my friends and family, they weren't going to the beach every day as I was going. So most of the people couldn't see what I was actually finding and seeing. It was when I started to dedicate myself to environmental education. So I started talking about this and creating some workshops and activities to talk about this subject and this problem. But I also like to combine science and art. I want the things to be fun. We can have fun when we are learning at the same time. And so in 2015, so a few years later, it was when I created the page on Facebook called Plásticos Marítimos. Because in that time, during 2015, it was when I discovered that there are two kind of people that pick up litter on the beach. There are the beach cleaner, which are people that they clean everything that shouldn't be on the beach, but they don't care what the things are. But then there are the beachcombers. And beachcombers is a name that we give to people that that find the things on the beach, but they also use it or collect it. They take it home because they want to make collections, or they want to use it to make art projects or something like that. And so the beachcombers are a kind of detectives of the trash. What is this? Where is it coming from? How is it used for? So it started to get to be a bit fun. Okay, I'm going to the beach. I'm not so depressed anymore because I was very curious. What am I finding today? Will I find something very old, or will I find something very fun or a toy or something like that? So it started to be fun, and during this time I started collecting, making different collections, because I thought one day I need to make an exhibition, because if people are not coming to the beach to see what I'm finding, I need to take the trash to people. I need to take them the plastic and the stories of the plastic. And I think the stories of these objects are very interesting. We see all that trash on the beach, but if we think that each object have a story to tell, it's very interesting. Who have been using this? Why was it discarded? And during many years, we didn't have a waste management. So it's normal to find old objects, but it's annoying when we find recent objects. We are finding, for example, or water bottles or coffee capsules. It's recent. And why are they ending up on the beach when we have a waste management, when these objects should be recycled? So it's sad it's very sad to find these things. But usually in my work, I just want to open people's eyes. I just want them to know this is happening. The coffee capsules are ending up on the beach. So maybe we should rethink, why do we need to drink coffee from coffee capsules? Maybe we have a different way of drinking coffee. I don't know. It's this kind of things that I like to do. Many times I just focus in one object to talk about it.
I've seen you picking up, collecting the same regular objects you found on the beach. For example, the coffee capsules found. And in the book, you mentioned like there was one day you found 133 straws just on that one particular day on the beach. And then I know that on Instagram and on Facebook, you line them up, you line all of these same objects together. And then I think it really makes the audience realize how these plastic waste can add up, because sometimes we think this is just one straw or just one coffee capsule, but they can really add up to a really large waste collection.
Yeah, and my collections start growing. Because in the beginning, I was just keeping a few objects. But for example, many of my friends, they didn't believe that the coffee capsules were ending up in the ocean.
Mm.
So, okay, I need to keep it because they need to see this. It's true. I'm not lying. And it's different brands. It's not only one brand. It's different brand. But at the same time, I think beachcombing is very important because if we see the objects and if we know the amount of some objects, maybe we can solve the problem. Because if I see, for example, if I go to my beach and I find too many of the same object, why is this here? Why am I finding so many of these things? Was it an accident or is it coming from a company, from somewhere?
Yeah, I think I resonate in a way how your friend doesn't believe the coffee capsule would end up in the ocean, because I think for me personally as well, before I was more aware of the issue, I didn't think the plastic waste that I made in my daily life would end up in the ocean. I thought that the government waste management is taking care of it. So could you like explain how these waste could like somehow end up in the ocean?
Sometimes I don't know exactly, because I think people should put it in the bins. We have bins. So I can understand why we find so many old things. It's always very impressive when I'm finding one object with 50 years and it's still around. Because during many years, we were making mountains of trash so they could come all over the place, because with the wind or when it was raining or something like that. So, but now maybe it fall off the containers or during the transportation, or I don't know exactly. I would like to know. Sometimes I would like these objects to speak and tell me their stories. With other objects, for example, the Q-tips, you know, the cotton.
Oh, the cotton swabs.
Yes, that kind of objects, they're coming through the toilet. They go to the treatment plant, water treatment plant. So, but sometimes they don't have, they are not able to treat everything, or and they have to open the doors and everything go to the ocean again. So a few things you can understand that we could make it different at home. So the sea can be very close. It's just in the toilet. We can be connected with the ocean right there in the next room.
Yeah, so all of these different objects that you found on these beaches near your home in Lisbon, they could come from like totally different countries. But as you said, these trash, they wouldn't speak to us. So we have no idea where they come from. But all of our waste, some of it, they do get dumped into the ocean. I think like the statistics in the book say it was 1,000 tons of plastic dumped into the ocean every hour.
Many times there are people that leave the trash in the environment directly. They just make some picnics, or they go to the beach and leave it there, or they go to the field or to a garden and make a picnic and leave the trash there. I can't understand why this can happen in 2022. It's not possible. So many people are not doing the correct thing. But in the ocean, directly in the ocean, many boats, they still throw trash from the boat. They throw it to the ocean. So during many years, the ocean was like a big bean, but the ocean can't survive anymore with this. And also there are many things related with fisheries. The nets, big nets, are lost in the ocean and killing many animals. And even from the companies and the transportation, sometimes things are lost. And of course, there are also accidents, many accidents with the big containers, that the container spills and they leave all the trash that we can find on the beach.
I remember the story of the rubber ducks that you mentioned in the books. Yeah. It was the container leak as well. What really sticks with me with your book, Plasticus Maritimus, is that, like you said, all of these plastic waste, they have a story attached to them. It's stories that draw people in. And when people hear about the stories behind these waste, it gives them a more of a emotional impact and makes them realize how bad plastic pollution actually is.
Yes, but we are in Europe, and here in Europe, we have a good, or at least we have waste management, but many countries don't have it. Great amount of trash is coming from rivers, particularly in Asia. Many things are coming from the rivers, and in Africa, in some places. It also happens here, but it's in a small scale. Many trash is coming from the rivers also.
You mentioned that when you were doing these like plastic collecting on a beach, sometimes it's like a fun experience when you found like weird or interesting objects. I wonder if you could share a memorable item or like a memorable collection that you found on the beach.
So I think the collections that I like most is to find some small toys. They are monochromatic toys. They are small and they are all the same color. And they are from the 60s or the 70s. And in that time, I think it's in the book also, they were gifts from the ice creams in the 60s and 70s and even 80s. So that's fun to find that kind of toys. And I'm collecting them, and then I have the pictures of the collection, so I can see the what I have already and what is missing. So it's like the kids when they go to buy the toys for their collection. So I'm going to the beach trying to find the things to complete my collections.
I remember during my childhood at McDonald's, they would give out these plastic toys that come with Happy Meals, right? I don't think at the time I was ever aware the toys were plastic. I think because of government regulation, more people are aware of how like those disposable plastic bags and plastic bottles, they are like really bad for the environment. But I think through your book, it really draws awareness to how plastic really is everywhere. Like before reading your book, I never thought about how our clothes made of synthetic materials, they could contain plastic, and that when we wash them in our washing machine, some of those microplastics would go down with the water into the ocean eventually. That was really eye-opening for me.
Yeah, it's a huge problem. It's very difficult to solve, especially the microplastics. So I think it's urgent to pick up or to make or to try not to have big plastic on the beach or in the ocean. To prevent it to turn into microplastic. Microplastic, it's impossible to take out from the ecosystems. Microplastic is now in every ecosystem, in land or in the ocean. And we can find plastic in the most remote island or in the deepest place in the ocean, there is plastic. I try to make this a kind of a bit fun and light, the subject. But it's really bad, and we humans are incorporating microplastics in our body. And there's a scientific article from December 2020. It was found microplastic in human placenta. This is very bad. And the problem is not only the plastic, which is toxic. The problem is especially in the marine plastic, when the plastic is in the ocean, it incorporates other pollutants. So every little particle of plastic can be a bomb of of toxic products, and we can suffer with many different problems, maybe some diseases. So many of these things are still in the lab being studied. We don't know yet all the consequences of we can have by incorporating this plastic. But it is, of course, in the food chain, in the marine life, many animals can regurgitate it, or they, in any way, may some of them can expel it from their bodies, but many others can't do it. So they will incorporate their stomach full of plastic, and then they may die because they feel satiated. They don't feel hungry to eat normal food. They think they are full enough, and they start getting very weak, and they possibly die. And this is happening with very small animals, but also with huge animals like whales. So I'm not working directly with whales, but I think this is my way of saving whales. So I think this project is thinking about them too.
Yeah, you mentioned how you grew up with the ocean and you have loved whales since childhood. And while you had this feeling of like feeling depressed as you initially found plastic every day on the ocean, you turn those feelings into action because you had so much love for these marine animals, for the ocean, and you wanted to turn it into artivism, I think, as you called it in one of your presentation, right? Like art activism.
Yes, artivism, because I think artivism, it's an excellent way of communication. Because we can be activists, do something to raise awareness for a cause, in this case for plastic pollution, but with artivism we can have fun, but we also engage more people with this in this way, like making some compositions with the plastic, with the colors. I like to play with the colors, with the shapes of the plastic, and people are attracted to it. They like the colors. Oh, that's so beautiful. But then they realize that's plastic from the ocean. So it's shocking at the same time. So with artivism, many times I don't need to talk about directly about plastic pollution. But if people know that I'm using plastic from the ocean, so it's a subtle way of raising awareness for this. Mm-hmm. And with kids, it's also fun because they like to have fun. And I can make many different activities, and they know that this is coming from the beach, that I find it on the beach. So they get more connected and they want to help. They want to save the planet. They want to save the ocean. I usually, in my activities, I also like to talk about the animals and their curiosities and show, because many times kids know, because they know many animals that doesn't exist in Portugal. They know very well animals from Africa, savanna, or from the North Pole, for example, polar bears or penguins in Antarctica. And many times they don't know the animals that are living here in the beach. So I like to teach them and to tell them some curiosities of these animals. I want them to like the ocean. I want them to know what is living here. And why do we need to protect the ocean? And because we can't live in this planet if the ocean is sick. It's urgent to make it healthy. But the ocean is facing many different problems right now. Many, many different problems. And the marine litter is only one of the problems. But I think it's easy. Every one of us, everyone can do something. And it's nice when we feel that, okay, I can do something. Mm-hmm. I can measure it because I can see what, if I start using less plastic at home, I can count it. I can actually see that I'm using less plastic. And with the other problems, it's more difficult to measure. And I'm not saying that people shouldn't ban completely the plastic. Plastic can be a very good material, but we are facing a very huge problem with waste management, and that is the problem. We should ban the one single use object. It would be very good if we could do that.
As you said, plastic actually is a really good material because it is durable, and that's why it could live on Earth for so many years. But like you said, if it's in single use disposable items, when it's made of plastic, it would just go straight into waste, and it would either be burned or like just thrown into the ocean, and that's how this plastic pollution ends up on the beach.
Mm-hmm. And it's toxic. Yeah. When people burn it, it's also toxic, and it doesn't make sense. We are using for one single use one thing that is so durable.
Yeah, and I really like how in the book as well, and I guess in your workshops with kids, you turn reducing plastic into these tiny exercises. I think there is this chart where you're asking readers to keep track of the items they are touching, they're using every day, and see what materials they are made of. I wonder, when you are creating the book, what was the process like when you are like thinking of these activities, and did you intend the book for a younger reader audience?
So I was very lucky with this invitation from the Portuguese publisher to write a book about plásticos marítimos. I wrote the book with Isabel Munhoz Martins. I'm not the only author of the book. Isabel, it's very important in this book. With the book, to write the book, she made me some interviews to know more about plastic. I think the first time we met, she said, "Anna, tell me everything about plastic." So I was just talking blah, 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 about it. But I was very worried, because with writing the book, I want people to know that this is a very important problem. It's a big problem. But I don't want people to think that this is so bad that we are going to die tomorrow, so we don't need to do anything because we're going to die tomorrow. I want people to feel motivated. We still have time to do something, but we need to do something. So that was the main point. It's to motivate people for action, to do something.
When I talk to my family members or friends about plastic pollution, there is one common response I get when they start talking about recycling, repurposing plastic. And I think it's great. Lots of innovative companies, they are now repurposing plastics so that this plastic waste can be done for something else instead of being dumped into the ocean. But I think you mentioned in the book that recycling is actually the last step we should do. Mm-hmm. Can you elaborate more on that?
Yes, I think we have many things that we can do before recycling. Recycling is very important, but it's not the first thing we should do. We can't go buy something and think, okay, it doesn't matter to use this because I'm going to recycle it. We need to rethink the consumption. We need to rethink the way we use plastic. That it can be good, but many times we don't need to use that in plastic. And I think it's also important for people to take some conscience about it, because the plastic, it came to our lives, and we are so used to it that we don't see it. So that's what I usually say to kids, or even to adults in teachers training. 5 minutes, you have 2 minutes to write everything you touch since you wake up until you go to bed. And they get shocked, because it's just 2 minutes thinking about this, and they make a huge list of plastic things that we touch. So this is just to get some conscience about it and then rethink it. Many things that we use during the day, maybe we don't need it. Maybe we can ban a few things. And it would be nice in family. We don't need to do all the same, but we can decide in family, okay, we need to ban something. We need to refuse a few things at home. What can we refuse? So you can decide in family. It can be fun to make this process in family. Usually things for kids have lots of plastic. Since the cookies to the toys, everything is plastic. So, but it's nice for them to have some conscience about it and make them decide, okay, you can have this or you shouldn't have that, or okay, it's so difficult to refuse, but maybe we can reduce. For example, that kind of cookies that have lots of packaging, maybe we can, okay, we are not eating these every week, maybe we can eat these only once a month or something like that. So we can make some kind of fun games in family to reduce the plastic. It's very important to rethink the design of products, and because many, many packaging, many bottles, they have small things to seal. Maybe we can make it more simple and with less small pieces that we actually lose it. Mm. And they end up on the beach. So we should make the these kind of products very simple. Because if they are more simple, they can be reused more easily, and they also can be recycled more easily. So it should be rethink that kind of product design. After that, I think we should refuse. Learn to say no, especially to one single use objects, and refuse products with lots of packaging and plastic packaging. Maybe we can, when we go shopping, we want the product, we don't want the packaging. So maybe we can rethink this. Maybe I can buy the same product in a different place, or sometimes on the same place in the same supermarket, they are side by side. We just need to choose these instead of that. And then we should reduce the things that we cannot refuse, but maybe we can use less. And then we should
repair. I think that's the first
thing. Repair, yes. For example, my phone is broken. I don't want to buy a new one. But I try to fix it so many times. So I think it really is now in the end of its life. But many times we should repair our products, our clothes. Sometimes it's not so difficult as that. And I think the consumers have the right to repair. And many times we buy, for example, small objects like air dryer or other electrical products, small products, and sometimes it's not so difficult to fix it. Mm. So we should make them have a bigger lives. And after repair, I don't remember where.
Reduce. I have the book with me. That's why I can remember.
No, reuse. Yes. To give a new life to the objects. For example, we buy a jar with, I don't know, jam or beans or something like that. Maybe we can use that jar for something instead of throwing it away, or give a different purpose to an object. And then we should, maybe we also can share. In Portuguese, we have a word for that, but in English, it doesn't have an R. Maybe we can give our things to someone. For example, something that it's still good, but I don't want it anymore. Kids' games or clothes or many other things that we have at home and sometimes we don't need it. Maybe we should think this can be useful to someone else. Or, for example, old newspapers, maybe we can give it to a school, maybe they can make art projects with it, or, I don't know, rethink to whom we can, or maybe we can borrow to someone if they need, instead of buying a new one. If I have a machine, for example, for the garden, maybe I don't need to buy one because my neighbor have one, maybe we can share a few things. And then we have the recycle and the end of this all these are recycling is important, of course, because we can use that trash for a new material to do something new. But I think the products many times must have a value, so people don't feel strong enough to take it to the recycle bins. So if a bottle don't have any value, people don't care. They just put it in any bin instead of going to the companies where they recycle it. I don't know if you have machines that give you money.
Yeah, I think in your book you mentioned that like in countries like Germany, they have a system where people can get a tiny bit of coins, like money, when they recycle plastic
bottles. Exactly. So people should be motivated to recycle the things that they don't want. Because, for example, the plastic of the water bottles, that plastic is very good to recycle, PET plastic. It's very good to make other things with it. But the question is, it is produced million bottles and only a small part of the bottles reach the companies to recycle it. The others are lost in the environment or they are in the other bins. So we lose a good opportunity of using that material.
Yeah, so I think that's why the most important step, the first step is, well, after a sink is refuse it.
I think it's to refuse and to buy less of those things. We can have our own bottle instead of using that, and just using that when we really have to do it. Because sometimes it's important to have one of that bottles. So I'm not telling for people not to do it anymore in their lives. I'm just doing we need to rethink and use it only once a year.
Yeah, to do so in a more conscious way. Yeah, I think it's really great that in your book you have lots of information on the impact of plastics on ocean, and also actionable steps kids and even like older readers they can take in their everyday lives. But I wonder, just through our podcast today to our listeners, what do you think is like a small step they can start taking today on their way to reduce plastic and its impact on the ocean?
So we were talking about the water bottles. So I think that could be a very easy way, having their own reusable water bottle, and they can refill it every time they want, and leave the plastic bottles only for very special moments. And they also can use reusable bags when they go shopping instead of using plastic bags. In many countries, the plastic bags are being banned, or people have to pay for it. In Portugal, they have to pay the plastic bags, but it's not very expensive, so people get used to buy it. So they should be more expensive. I think the important thing is to refuse the one single use objects. But I also think it could be nice if they can try other products. Sometimes it's not easy. For example, shampoo. We are used to the shampoo, the liquid shampoo in the plastic bottle. But maybe we can try the solid one, a solid shampoo. It's like soap. We can use it just now. There are so many brands. So, okay, I don't like this one very much. Okay, I will use the plastic one again, but maybe later I can try again a new brand. And so sometimes we need to try different products to see what we like. And the toothbrush, for example, we can have a bamboo one instead of a plastic toothbrush. That's also a very mysterious thing. I don't know why do I find so many toothbrushes on the beach. It's very strange, but there are a lot. We can also give up of the shower gel and the gel to wash our hands. liquid soap and we can use the solid soap. It's just a return to the past. We can go a little bit for the old times and use some products that we were used to, our parents and grandparents used many years ago, and try to use reusable products. I think the problem in the planet, it's not only the plastic, it's also the sustainability. Many times we can buy very cheap things. And here in Portugal, for example, we have the Chinese stores with very cheap products. But sometimes we should think not only about the plastic, but all the way these objects did to be in Portugal. They came very far away. They came from boat, from very far away countries. And maybe we could have something produced closely here in Europe or in Portugal or something like that. I said Chinese products, but it could be any other country. And for example, we don't have bamboo in Portugal, or we don't have huge fields of bamboo. If everybody start to want bamboo, bamboo is coming from Asia. Most of the bamboo is coming and produced from far away. So maybe bamboo, it's not the it's a very good product, of course, and it's biodegradable, but it depends where is it coming from. And the, I don't know, we need to rethink everything we buy. It's very...
Yeah, so it's not just about the plastic, but also its whole carbon footprint, right? Like where,
yes,
where the product is produced and where it is shipped from and like what it is made of, even if it's not...
Yes, because...
Yeah.
Yes, because everybody now, people talk about sustainability, but many times they think sustainability is just a biodegradable product, and it's not. Sustainability, we should think in environment, of course. We should think about people who did this, who produced this. Because many times people are being explored to produce very cheap things to sell in other parts in the world. So where is this coming from? Who produced it? And also the economy, of course. It can't be so expensive that we cannot buy it. So it must have a price that people can buy it. So it's difficult to have an equilibrium here.
Yeah, it is a really large issue, but I think it's really good that you have focused on plastic and that it is something really concrete that people can take small steps in their life. Once people are on the journey, I think they will become aware of other issues such as like the carbon footprint and how, like where the products are made, are these workers being exploited or not? Yeah, but I think plastic is a really good place to start, especially for young kids.
Yes, and I think the plastic, it's easy because everyone touching plastic every day. So it's easy for us. Every one of us can decide what it's important, what we cannot ban, but many things that we can ban in our everyday lives. So it's in our hands to do something. So that's the good thing of the problem. But also this is a global problem. But the good thing is, and there are many people around the world now raising awareness for this. I think about plastic, we are in a revolution period of it. Every day we have news about new products. Every day we can hear good things that are happening around the world. So I think we are in a good way. It has been a bit slow for the size of the problem. But I think we are in a good way, and I think that's the good thing. And I'm very happy for the book going around the world, so more people can be engaged and informed about this. So,
Yeah, it's great that your book can be read both by young readers and also their parents, their educators, just adults in general. My last question for you would be just based on your own experience working with kids, because I know you hold lots of workshops for kids on these environmental issues. I wonder what would your advice be to educators and parents who want to help children to be more aware of the impact of plastic on ocean or just environmental issues in general?
So many times kids are more informed about this than parents. And what I see sometimes at schools, because I'm going, I go a lot to Portuguese schools to talk about this problem. But what I'm feeling right now since 1 year ago, many people is talking about this, many schools are working about this subject. This is not a strange subject right now in Portugal. People are learning about it, and at schools they are working on it. But many times they are not changing at school. And I think that's the sad thing. I want teachers to work about this subject, but I want teachers to feel compromised to change a few things at school. And I think that should be important. And the rest, I think the adults should give the good example. They should recycle. They should show kids that we can choose other products or reduce another ones. Okay, you like a lot these cookies, but maybe the kids can also be motivated to write to companies and say, I love your cookies, but these have lots of plastic. Can you do it in a different packaging, please?
Your kids' letters will be powerful.
Yes, they can be very powerful. And usually adults give more attention to kids than many times to adults. They feel that the kids are doing something and want to save the planet. So I think adults should motivate the kids to be more activists in the society and to fight for the things that they believe and fight for the ocean and fight for the animals and for us, for our life, especially, and for the future.
Mm. Well, thank you so much, Ina. Thank you for creating this really informative and really entertaining book on the impact of plastic and how us, like regular people, we can do our part in our everyday lives. And thank you for this amazing interview.
Thank you so much.
I hope this interview with Anna has helped you take on a more critical perspective towards your use of plastics. We can all make a contribution towards saving our ocean through our daily actions. You can learn more about the Plasticus Maritimus project on Anna's Instagram and Facebook page, which I have included in our show notes. And don't forget to pick up the book, which is the same name as the project itself. Subscribe to our podcast if you want to listen to more conversations like this we have with children's book authors and illustrators. I'll see you next time. Bye-bye.